Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is Nick Wright. Brian Westbrook joining us.
Good morning.
Good to have you here. You were
telling a joke. What up, Lee? How are you doing?
Right before we went on the air, you might as well share it with everyone.
Oh, no, I wasn't telling a joke. We have very funny producers on this television show. That's all. They just say things to me right before the show to try to make me laugh, and today they got it done.
Sometimes they do That's it all. While I'm talking.
Absolutely. Okay. So shout out to all the behind-the-scenes folks today.
I love it. We got a lot to get to on the program, and we are going to start with yesterday's big news in the NFL. After much speculation, the Carolina Panthers have fired their head coach, Ron Rivera, gone. He coached the team since 2011, including loss in Super Bowl 50, but he couldn't navigate a tough 5-7 season plagued by an injury to his star quarterback, Cam Newton. Well, Cam weighed in on Instagram saying this one hurt deep. Owner David Tepper explained his decision, saying, "I believe this is the best decision for the long-term success of our team. I have a great deal of respect for Ron and the contributions he has made to this franchise and to this community. I wish him the best. I will immediately begin the search for the next head coach of the Carolina Panthers." So, Nick, one thing leads to another. If Ron Rivera is gone, what does this mean for quarterback Cam Newton?
I think it opens up a window, however slight, that the Panthers do the smart thing and keep Cam as their quarterback next year. Quickly on Ron Rivera, though, he's an excellent coach. I know we'll talk about his future in a bit. I did not think he should have been fired. I certainly don't think he should have been fired midseason. I think it was a mistake by the new owner in Carolina, and one that is hard to justify given all that Ron Rivera's done for that franchise. Just my take on that, but he'll land on his feet, and I know we'll get into that. For Cam, if it's true, as what I heard some people speculating, more than speculating, seemed like informed speculating, people that had talked to people on the ground yesterday in Carolina, that they might want to go to one of these collegiate coaches, maybe a more wide open offensive model. If I'm the Carolina Panthers, I certainly would like to see if a healthy Cam Newton at a very reasonable $20 million cap hit next year, which is the Nick Foles range of quarterbacks in the modern era of paying quarterbacks, if he can work with that, how healthy he is. And if not, I would then look to the following year's draft, or maybe even this year's draft, with a year in waiting in mind for my next quarterback. So I think that the Panthers as an organization had basically decided we're moving on from the coach and the quarterback. But once you move on from the coach, what if the new coach says, "Well, I think I can work really well with Cam. I think some of these collegiate models we're seeing work really well with Cam's skill set." So I think the window is open slightly ajar to keeping Cam Newton in-house, because I don't think anyone's going to come in there and say, "Kyle Allen's going to be my quarterback." It's either Cam or through the draft. And Brian, even if it's through the draft, maybe you want to keep Cam Newton for the final year of his contract.
Yeah, I love the idea of keeping Cam Newton. I think when you have a veteran quarterback that has been through wars, a healthy Cam Newton. That's the biggest question. But when I hear the owner, David Tepper, say we're rebuilding, it's going to be messy, and it's a process, to me that all says that we're not going to keep Cam Newton. We're going to go and move on to a brand new coach as well as a brand new quarterback. And I think that can be a messy process. You have a lot of things going for you there in Carolina. The biggest thing is Christian McCaffrey. And if you go away from Cam Newton, you bring in a rookie quarterback, what are you going to do with him at that point? He's one of your stars in that city. That's something that you have to think about. You see what's going on in New York with Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley, and trying to match up the time that your star running back is going to have a quarterback that's capable of playing and helping them win. That's a messy process. And if you're talking about a 2-3-4 year process, why not keep Cam for a year, just like you're mentioning, groom a young quarterback, and then at that process, when that process is over, transition to that new process. That's the best way to do it, especially when you have a great weapon like Christian McCaffrey.
David Tepper also said that it was time because long-term mediocrity would not be tolerated. Do you think this has been a mediocre team the last couple of years? Well, or is the answer yes, because of the injuries plagued by Cam Newton?
Exactly right, Jenna. We need to understand what Ron Rivera and Cam Newton had done in Carolina the last half decade. They go 15-1 and go to the Super Bowl. The next year, they win the division and win a playoff game. The next year, they go 12-4 and get to the divisional round of the playoffs before losing a really good playoff game to Drew Brees and company in the New Orleans Saints. And then what happens? They're 6-2, and then Cam Newton gets his shoulder hurt, and since then it's been a disaster. They're 1-7 the rest of that year. They are this year they're 5-7 on the season. Like, that is what they've been throughout this Cam Newton era, as far as a couple, three division titles, if I'm not mistaken. They've been to the playoffs four times. They have been consistently in it when Cam's been healthy. And so I don't think you needed to rip it all down. But to your point, the new owner seems like he wants to rip it all down.
Yeah, he wants to rip it all down. Getting away from a coach that's going to bring you character, that's going to bring you consistency, that's going to bring you culture, that has NFL experience, it just doesn't always make sense at the middle point of the season. Here's the other thing. When you get embarrassed and lose to the Washington Redskins, yes, who are a historically bad football team over the last 15, 20 years, that's why these decisions actually happen. But you also got to wonder, what happened to that defense? When this team was good, that defense was rolling. They end up having Ron Rivera calling the defensive side of the ball. That defense still hasn't quite figured it out. Offensively, they were rolling when they had a run game and Cam was in that pocket throwing the football and running the football as well. We're not quite sure if the new coach will want Cam to run the football anymore. That's why I think Cam is probably done there in Carolina.
And what's the theme in the NFL? What have you done for me lately? They don't look at what he's done in the first couple of years of Ron Rivera's career and coaching career in Carolina. It was what was happened the last couple of years, regardless of whether it was because of Cam's injuries or not. I love Ron Rivera, too. I worked with Ron when he was, I think, the linebackers coach in Philadelphia. He's a strong guy. He's a great coach. You even said it. He's definitely going to land on his feet. Where do you think he could end up?
Well, I think right now the Dallas Cowboys and the Cleveland Browns should both be. There's no tampering with coaches. Well, even if there is, it doesn't matter because Ron Rivera's now been fired. Even though they are yet to fire Jason Garrett and Freddie Kitchens, those are two teams that are ready to win right now. Two teams that I believe have above average, if not better, quarterbacks. Two teams that have enough talent on the roster that if they just had better coaching would be not only in the playoff picture, but I think leading, potentially leading their respective divisions. Cleveland maybe not leading over Baltimore, but right there in the thick of the AFC playoff hunt. Those, a team like that needs a coach like this. And a team like that, I believe, could use a defensive-minded, hard-nosed head coach that says, hey, we're going to hire the offensive coordinator. His job is going to be the quarterback. My job is going to be everything else on the roster. So I wouldn't, if I were Dallas or Cleveland, try to go with a Lincoln Riley type, which maybe works, and maybe you're going after another coach in a couple years. I know Ron Rivera can coach in this league. I know that two teams that lack discipline, that lack attention to detail, could use a coach such as Ron Rivera. So those are two teams that I feel like we know the jobs are going to be open at the end of the year. I think they should start the bidding war right now for Ron Rivera, because one of them is, if they're smart, is going to get him, and one of them is going to be missing out.
You're absolutely right. Both of those teams, they need a defensive-minded coach. And I think when you talk about what's going on in Dallas, Kellen Moore has done a decent job of progressing Dak Prescott, but they both need discipline. Both of those teams, when you talk about the defensive side of the ball, and in Cleveland, offensive side of the ball, they need discipline. They need a guy that has pedigree in the NFL. And when you bring in one of these young coaches, there's a lot of veteran players that are always looking at him like, well, what does he know about the NFL? What does he know about what's going on in this league? But you bring in a guy like Ron Rivera, he's a guy that they're going to say, all right, it's no nonsense from day one. We're going to be disciplined. He has a pedigree as a player as well as a coach. He led his team to a Super Bowl in 2015. And at this point, now he has to go out there and continue to coach. And he will. He will continue to coach. And I was with him in Philadelphia as well. And he was a guy that was no nonsense. He led that linebacker group under Jim Johnson. And he's a guy that can go and change things in Cleveland as well as Dallas. And so both of those locations would be great for Ron Rivera.
Take a lot of discipline to change things in Cleveland right now. Just a little pop shot on our way to first break of the show. Here First Things First, now joined by former NFL head coach Eric Mangini. Good morning, coach.
Good morning. How are you?
Good to have you this morning.
Good morning.
All right, we're talking Philadelphia Eagles. To say the Eagles have underwhelmed this season would be an understatement. Their 5-7 record hit its low point with a loss to the Dolphins on Sunday. Doug Peterson has taken the blame, saying, I'm disgusted, I'm mad, I'm angry, and I'm probably more so mad at myself. Eagles could have tied the Cowboys atop the division with a win against Miami. Instead, they are back to the drawing board with just four games left to play. Brian, you're a resident Eagle guy on set here. Who is to blame? Is it Peterson or is it quarterback Carson Wentz?
You know, while Carson Wentz has not played great, Coach, five touchdowns and three interceptions in the last three games, I place this last loss to Miami at the feet of Doug Peterson. Here's the thing. You're going down to Miami to play a 2-9 football team, and you don't have your team prepared. You don't have your team amped and ready to go down there and win a football game. And this is why you should. You have five games left, and if you win those five games, you can make it into the playoffs. That's the thing that all coaches, that all players, that's your goal at the beginning of the season, to make it into the playoffs. And these guys weren't prepared. They were not ready. 10 penalties in a football game. That's coaching. That's discipline. I put that squarely at the feet of Doug Peterson. Here's a couple things that I want to point out, and this is important. Carson Wentz in his passing attempts, last three games against New England, 40 passing attempts. Seattle, 45. Miami, 46 passing attempts. In these games, he was never down by more than 7 points. Run the doggone football. 18 carries, 18 carries, 19 carries. You have an opportunity as a play caller, Doug Peterson, to run the football. Your most explosive player on offense is your running back, Miles Sanders. He's been your most consistent and your most explosive player on offense. Why are you not running the football, especially when your quarterback is basically 2-13 when he passes over 40 times a football game? That's not how you win, especially with the receivers that you have. Doug Peterson continues to knock his head against the wall, trying to give the ball to Carson Wentz and win football games that way. That's not the way the Eagles will win football games.
And when you hear him talking in the press conference, he said he's mad, he's disappointed, he's all these different things. What is he mad at? I would like a little bit of clarity. What is he disappointed in? Does he feel like he didn't put a good enough game plan in place? Does he feel like he didn't have enough discipline during the course of the week? Does he feel like he's had some shortcomings as a program in terms of discipline? The difficult thing is when you have success like they had success and you win a Super Bowl and it's with a philosophy of maybe a lighter environment, we're all going to have fun. We've talked about that a ton. And then you double down the next year. It's hard now to change directions and tell everybody in that locker room, we have to take a different approach. We have to be harder. We have to be not who we have been. Because the guys look at you and say, well, if that was good enough before, why isn't it good enough now?
Like, I don't know in your household who the disciplinarian is. Maybe it's both parents. My guess is it's you. So I'm not in mine. And my wife's the much more strict parent. I'm the more, listen, kids, it is.
Right.
And
party dad.
Right. And occasionally, if I get angry or I get upset and I try to be strict, my youngest daughter will laugh.
Yes, she laughs at you.
She will laugh. Yep.
Doesn't
she's
bite.
Like, what are you talking about? And there is, and I understand that's not a perfect analogy, but it seems to be what you're talking about. Like, you establish with young people or with a young football team who you're going to be, and that is who they believe you to be moving forward. The only issue I'll take with what you said, Brian, is I did think Philly was ready to play. They were up 10-0. They were then up 14 points in the second half. And to allow Ryan Fitzpatrick and those Miami Dolphins, and credit to Brian Flores, who has his team still fighting. Yeah. The organization might want to tank. He ain't part of it, and the players don't seem to be. The players that are left don't seem to be a part of it. To allow them to score 23 straight points, that's why I can't put it on Wentz. Wentz has been bad this year, but given his standards, and honestly, he's been league standards, a below average quarterback this season. He needs to be better.
Yep.
He, to whom much given, much is expected. He's got the big contract extensions, never played in a playoff game. He needs to be better. But the Miami game individually, 30 against Miami should be enough. That should be enough points to win that football game. Up 14 against Miami in what I would consider close to a must-win game. They saw, like the whole world saw, their division rival fall flat on their face on Thanksgiving. They knew what was in front of them. And to have the game won and then to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory the way they did defensively in that second half, to me is almost unforgivable, and that is that we can't put on the right arm of Carson Wentz.
The Miami Dolphins scored on six straight possessions. Five of those possessions were touchdowns. At some point, your coach, And I know Doug is not a defensive coach, but at some point your coach has to make an adjustment. And coach, you have to understand this, that Devontae Parker is the one guy that's killing you. Maybe we should just double team him. Maybe if you have a situation where your special teams is out there and it's a formation that you may not recognize, even if you do, maybe it's a special formation, maybe you should just call a timeout. These are small things that Doug Peterson could have done in this football game that he didn't do, and he has to just do a better job of coaching. And when you talk about Carson Wentz, Nick, the turnovers have been his issue. Yes. Last game, 4 turnovers. He has to be a much more accurate passer. If he can do that with his fundamentals and his mechanics, then he'll play much better. They have to get some guys around him. All the good teams that have great receivers around them that are playing the best on offense, they have speed. The Eagles have no speed at all.
Can just explain this to me. If you're a head coach, how do you pivot from where your message point was? If you were one team and it's not working, how do you get in touch with the guys? They're not firing Doug Peterson. This is going to be the same group of guys for the next 4 games. How do you suddenly say, we blew it? Because he did say after that Dolphins game, we just didn't try hard enough. He literally said, we didn't try hard enough, and they did. Tell me how you pivot on message points to a group of guys.
That's my point. It's really hard to pivot because you've spent a lot of time saying, this is what I believe in. This is how we're going to operate. The Patriots do things their way. That's okay, but we're going to show the world that we can do things a different way. And then you have some success, and then you double down and you sneak into the playoffs the next year.
And win a playoff game.
And win a playoff game, and now you're at the point where you do have to change because it's constantly evolving. But everybody in that locker room is saying, this is what you told us worked. We saw that it worked. This is the guy you said you are, and now you want to be somebody different? I don't know how he's going to be able to pivot, especially in this short amount of time, to try to do something effective.
And organizationally, this went under the radar. But this week, in the midst of all of this, they made Lane Johnson the highest paid right tackle ever. Mm-hmm. And Lane Johnson's been one of the most vocal, I'd rather have fun, you know, it was a tongue-in-cheek quote that now gets thrown in his face a lot, but the I'd rather have fun and win one Super Bowl than be miserable and win a bunch. And now Lane is a great player, one of the best in the league at his position. He is wildly important for Carson Wentz, but you do wonder if maybe that contract extension could have been agreed to, but just put on hold, maybe temporarily, because I wonder what the message it does send to the locker room if you are trying to, you know, turn the tanker a bit as far as the direction and mentality of the team when one of the standard bearers of the mentality they had a few years ago gets $80 million.
If the coach can't change who he is, that means the veterans in the locker room need to step up and do a little bit more. That's who I would lean on.
Well, I think he can change. I just don't know if they're going to take him seriously.
All right, Nick, who do you trust more on Sunday, Mahomes or Brady?
Well, I just saw Tom Brady against a defense that is bottom 5 against the pass, bottom 5 on third down, bottom 5 in the red zone, and bottom 5 at getting to the opposing quarterback.
How'd he do?
And through 3.5 quarters, he was terrible. And I've seen Patrick Mahomes throughout his brief but spectacular career just have, honestly, the worst 2-game stretch he's had in his career. And it's a 2-game stretch this year that Tom Brady would climb over mountains for. Because right now you have one player who is ascending towards all-time great status, and you have another player who is the all-time greatest who has descended below league average status. So even though the Patriots secondary is exceptional, the one thing we've seen as of late is they struggle with speed. Nobody's got more speed than the Kansas City Chiefs, and they played them twice last year. And in week 6 in New England and in the AFC Championship game in Kansas City, while New England won both those games, I'm aware of how they ended, in both those games, the Kansas City Chiefs scored 31 second half points. The reason they didn't win those games is a lot of things, but one could say is slow starts. That's not going to happen again this weekend. And of course, you trust Patrick Mahomes, who is the most talented player in the league, against Tom Brady, who once upon a time was the best player in the league, but that time is a few years removed from now.
So yesterday, Lamar Jackson was the most talented player in the league.
No, I did not say that. Now, that's today, not what I said.
Patrick
I said
Mahomes
he's the MVP. There's a difference.
Most talented player, but he's not the most talented player. Okay. And so the last game that you talked about with Tom Brady, you said you listed his stats, and that's problematic, right? Because that defense is so bad. Yet when Patrick Mahomes has his worst two game stretch. We don't really take that into account. That's just a little bit of an aberration. Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, because over the course of the season, he's got 20 touchdowns, two picks, and a 108 rating. So
okay,
yeah.
But in back-to-back games, he's what, 20% below his quarterback rating. He's 10% below his completion rating. So he's really trending upwards.
No, he's had a bad 2 weeks.
Okay. So then we talk about the games against New England, and you keep coming back to the second half. Is he going to be able to put together a good first half? Is he going to be able to come out and figure out what New England's doing? Or is he just going to have to run around and try to figure out a way to get guys open because he has no idea how to diagnose the coverages? Now, I think Patrick Mahomes is incredibly talented. I think their offense is explosive. I think the thing that he has to show is that he can look at what's in front of him, be able to diagnose it effectively, and not have to keep waiting till the second half to try to make a dramatic comeback.
I'm going to go Tom Brady here, and I agree with you, Coach. I think Patrick Mahomes is a special player, but walking into Foxborough where they've won 21 straight, including the playoffs, it's just hard to do. It's a certain when you walk in there and you're looking at the banners up there, you're talking about a ring ceremony, you see Tom Brady on the other sideline. That's just a daunting task for anyone, and Patrick Mahomes has proven that he can win in certain situations, but that defense that the Patriots have, they're special. They've only given up two touchdowns and seven interceptions at home this season. They know how to get after a quarterback in a way. And the one thing that they do better than anyone is adjust. Adjust to what you're doing and take away what you do well. Just imagine if they take away the big play down the field from Tyreek Hill. Now, what do the Kansas City Chiefs go to? Do they go to a run game? That's been non-existent. Do they just throw the ball to Travis Kelce? He's a great option, but can you somehow double team him? There's a lot of different things that you can do to slow down this Kansas City Chiefs offense. That's why I'm leaning towards more of Tom Brady than anything.
But I'm just curious. I just want to know, if Brady struggles against this very mediocre Chiefs defense, it's not going to be because of him, though. It's the weapons. If Brady plays well, it's because he's great. And if he struggles, though, it's that, well, listen, Julian Edelman, who I'm told is a fringe Hall of Famer, James White is one of the best pass-catching running backs in the league, and a first-round pick at wide receiver, another first-round pick at running back. It's not enough. It's not fair to ask Tom Brady against the 32nd-ranked Houston Texans red zone defense and 28th-ranked Houston Texans passing defense and 31st-ranked Houston Texans third-down defense to do more. But I just don't know what the rules of engagement are for this as far as what I'm expecting to see on Sunday afternoon.
There's always been a sliding scale for Tom.
I'm saying when half the team flies down a different plane because they've had the flu, of course we don't take that into account because of the Patriots. They always overcome it. When it's your third center, you don't look at it. It's the Patriots. They always overcome it. When you lose your starting tight end, when you lose your backup tight end.
Starting tight end. He retired.
No, I'm talking about James Devlin.
Okay, so you lose James Devlin. Gotcha.
Well, he's a fullback tight end hybrid.
Gotcha, sorry.
When you have the transition, the young players that they have, and we have such a high expectation of them being able to overcome every challenge that they're graded on a different curve. And if you put Patrick Mahomes on New England's offense,
they win the Super Bowl going away. If you put Patrick Mahomes on a team with that defense, they win the Super Bowl going away.
I want to know, Patrick Mahomes offensively, what would that performance look like?
Without those speed weapons.
He is with New England's offensive group. It's Patrick Mahomes. Tell me what that looks like.
Okay, I'll tell you what it looks like. You know what? Philip Dorsett becomes a legitimate deep threat. And N'Keal Harry has the type of season McCole Hardman's having now that he's back in the lineup. And we're not whining about the lack of a fullback, because if you have Patrick Mahomes on your team, you're not trying to run some I formation 1960s offense. You're throwing the ball around the field. They ran the reason the center, the blocking tight end, and the fullback are so desperately important is because you got a 42-year-old man at quarterback, so you have to lean on the run game. They would love. Are you kidding me? What it would look like if Patrick Mahomes was on this team with that defense? And I like Andy Reid, but that schematic coaching advantage, what it would look like? Yeah. It would look like an undefeated team that is the overwhelming favorites to win the Super Bowl, as opposed to a team that has a gaudy record but is about to be 0-3 against the three teams in the conference that matter: the Ravens, the Texans, and in 4 days, the Kansas City Chiefs.
You're telling me that Patrick Mahomes hasn't benefited significantly from having arguably the best tight end and one of the most explosive receivers?
Absolutely, yeah.
But now when you put him into a group that doesn't have anywhere near that level of ability, mm-hmm. you're telling me that he's going to elevate those guys. When his weapons aren't available, Everybody's talking about the fact that it's so challenging
really?
For him. Yes.
Because before he hurt his knee, Tyreek Hill went out in week one. He didn't have him the entire time, and he was the best quarterback statistically in football. The Patriots lost their center. The Chiefs lost the number one overall pick left tackle for 8 weeks. No one gives a damn. Like, pardon me. They lost when they lost their left tackle, they also lost their left guard. Does anyone know? No, because teams lose offensive line into injury every week in this league. But because we are grasping for reasons why Tom Brady's gone 2 months without a great game, it's like, well, what do you expect him to do? Well, I mean, what do you expect him to do with an all-time great defense and the greatest coach ever and the best home field advantage in sports? It can't be his fault when it's clearly partially his fault.
Well, the Patriots certainly need to get back to running the football. That's what they did well last year. Yeah. Without Gronk on the edge, I think that's a little bit of an issue. Coach, I want to ask you a question, though. When you talk about the coaching matchup, Andy Reid versus Bill Belichick, who do you give the edge in that matchup?
Well, look, I love Andy Reid, and I think that Andy Reid puts together offensive schemes that are incredibly challenging because it's shifting, it's motioning, it's gadget formations, it's things that define man and zone where he's got three wide receivers, the one side and the tight end on the backside, and he's always created a lot of challenges, but they've faced each other for a long time. So each time you see a guy again, there's going to be different things that come into play. My question for Kansas City is how well are they going to handle the line games mm-hmm. that New England has incorporated more and more throughout the course of this year and has created a ton of problems for people they played.
And Belichick has a coaching edge over everyone. Yes. But one thing that John Harbaugh has in his favor is I don't think he's intimidated by going up against Belichick. I don't think Andy Reid is either. If you were the game that everyone 6 years ago said, oh, to the end of the Patriot era, was against an Andy Reid team. The only, they're 106-1 since Brady took over when they have a halftime lead at home. The one was against Alex Smith and Kansas City Chiefs in 2017. Both games last year, the Chiefs had leads in the fourth quarter. I think Belichick has a coaching edge over everyone in the world. I don't think it's that it's not as big of a discrepancy against Andy Reid as it is against other coaches, and he has some level of success
and
against
him. I think your comments about New England having an all-time great defense is a little bit deceptive, too, based off of who they played earlier in the season. I think you're seeing now more in line with where that defense is as they face offenses that are they're a lot more explosive.
Not only did the Patriots face coaches these last 2 weeks that weren't afraid of them, they faced defenses that weren't afraid of that offense. I'm not sure that Kansas City is a physical enough defense to handle some of those things.
First things first, we're now joined by Super Bowl champ Imani Toomer.
Thank you so much for joining us, Imani.
Thanks so much for being the first time.
Yeah, definitely first time.
Super Bowl champ. Yeah. That's when I was playing in Philadelphia. Were you still in Philly then?
I was not in Philly. I was covering the Super Bowl champ.
Did you guys win one there?
Oh my God. That's a shot to
awesome.
My heart.
Welcome
You're
to
close,
the
though.
Show.
You're close.
All right.
Fine.
Thanks for
I
coming.
Like it. Look, we were all in the NFC East, so let's keep it there. Man. Tough times Jeez, for the Dallas weeks. Cowboys these days, gentlemen. The team is struggling. The coach is on the hot seat, and Jerry Jones is woefully unsatisfied. Yesterday, when asked again about Jason Garrett's status, Jones chose his words carefully. Said Garrett will be coaching, quote, in the NFL next year. Didn't say for the Cowboys, the NFL. Nick, you had Cowboys legend Terrell Owens on your SiriusXM radio show last night, and he said Garrett was to blame for the Cowboys' struggles.
You have to attribute that to the head coach. Again, you can't just point fingers at the players. The players are really a byproduct of the coach. You're only going to do and go as far as your head coach leads you. It's been the same old story, you know, with Jason Garrett and the Dallas Cowboys team year after year after year. I've been saying it since I left, and I haven't backed away from it. So, again, at the end of the day, Jerry has to at some point bite the bullet and understand that this guy, he is not the answer.
Nick, is T.O. right?
Well, yes, and you don't, to steal a line from old LeVar Burton on Reading Rainbow, you don't have to take my word for it. Take Jerry Jones' word for it. If any public service announcement, if any of our or your employers are ever asked about your status moving forward and like, well, it'll be working somewhere next year, you are screwed.
Right.
It is a wrap for you, B. And so the idea that the Cowboys are not moving on from Jason Garrett, I think we can now set it aside And Amani, the reason they have to, even if you want to, not you, but the generic use, people want to argue, actually, Jason Garrett's a good coach, is because the players are not going to change next year. They're going to bring Dak back. I believe they're going to bring Amari back. Every other frontline player is signed multiple years. So if you're not going to be able to change the personnel, what is the other fundamental shift you can make? They've already changed out offensive coaching staff. They a few years ago changed out defensive coaching staff. Like there's only one card left to play. It's not going to be a rebuild. It's going to try to be a regrouping to where they were a couple years ago, and it's going to be through firing the head coach.
Well, I think you got to understand why Jerry Jones stuck with Jason Garrett for so long as it is. It's a personality thing. You know, he won. They won 3 Super Bowls in 4 years, but he didn't like the fact that he didn't like the way the coach took most of the credit for the victory. So this is a situation where he's there. Jason Garrett is there because of the fact that he gets along well with Jerry Jones. He knows how to make Jerry Jones feel comfortable. He doesn't overstep his bounds. And that's why he's been there for so long. Because, you know, I like Jason Garrett. I think Jason Garrett, I played with Jason Garrett with the Giants. I credit him for helping me, you know, have one of my better seasons. So I wouldn't say that the problem in Dallas, I wouldn't say it's Jason Garrett. I think it's easy to say it's Jason Garrett. But this team is just not very good. I think they have a lot of players that are good players. I don't think they have a lot of great players. I think there are players that, that check the box in the NFC East. But when you go outside the NFC East and you play against the rest of the league, they just don't match up. And you can put as much, you can try to make them as good as you want them to be. But I just don't think this team, I think they are where they are because you are where your talent leaves
you. So you don't think they're underachieving given their talent level?
I don't, because we look at where the teams that they win or they beat this year are all teams that are, you know, 500 or below or teams in the NFC East.
Is that because they're underachieving because their coach isn't pushing them the right way? Or is that because these guys are just not good enough? Because when I look at Amari Cooper, I see one of the top 5-6 receivers in the game. When I see the progression of Dak, I'm seeing a quarterback that has gotten much better, top 5 quarterback in the league, and a defense that has been underwhelming these last few weeks. And well, Zeke, of course, he's a top 5 running back as well. And you paid your offensive line a bunch of money. So they certainly have some talent, I think. I think they've underachieved. There's 2 questions you got to ask yourself. Who will want to coach for a team where their owner comes out in week 12, week 13, and says these types of things? Who would want to coach for that? Because now we're still in the playoff hunt. In fact, we're leading the NFC East for opportunity to make it into the playoffs. Who would want to coach there? And the other one would be, what would be the answer? What would be the one thing that would make Jason Garrett stay there, right? The playoffs, making the playoffs, of course, and winning the Super Bowl. Of course, he has to come back after that. Is this team ready to make a playoffs? Potentially. Are they ready to win a Super Bowl right now? Absolutely not, especially the way that they've played lately. They can't do either one of those things. And so I think the answer for Jason Garrett is that he probably won't be here next year.
I think Jason Garrett is the scapegoat. He's the easiest person to fire is the head coach, you know, or the quarterback, right? They like Dak. They think Dak is on an upward trend. But I just think that you look at this team and you talk about all their talent. Amari Cooper, he's a great player. Is he top 5? I don't know if he's top 5. You got to remember when he was at when he was with the Raiders, he was a shadow of himself for years,
bad
right?
Quarterbacking.
So he comes back to, you know, to Dallas. He plays a lot better, and all of a sudden people think he is where he was his rookie year. I think he's a good player. I wouldn't put him in the top 5 in the league. I think there's other, I'm not no slight against him, but being in the top 5, you can't just have one good season. You have to have a couple good seasons stacked upon each other to prove that that's how you are, not the fluke. So I don't want to take anything away from Amari Cooper, but I would let him develop into the player that he could be instead of just giving him this title of top 5. I think the Dallas Cowboys shed that light on people and give them and elevate them higher than they really are.
Here's the problem, though, for Jason Garrett, even if you're correct. Jerry and his son Steven clearly believe this team's more talented than you do.
Yes.
Because they have paid them as such. The Cowboys, the reason the Cowboys can't deal with injuries, I don't think that's coaching, by the way. I think that is the way they've built their team. When you have as many frontline, high-paid players, the reason the Patriots, every year, the way they build their roster is they have a bigger middle class than any team in football. They have a ton of like $4 to $7 million a year guys because aside from Gilmore and Brady, nobody's making above $15 million. Mm-hmm. The Cowboys done the opposite. You got the highest paid offensive line in football. You gave Zeke his money. You gave DeMarcus Lawrence his money. You gave Jalen Smith his money. And we're talking about them even doubling down even further on that strategy with a contract for Dak or Amari or Byron Jones or at least two of those three. And so the guys who've picked the players are the people who are going to decide on the head coach, and they don't want to blame themselves. Mm-hmm. They don't want to say, we made bad decisions. Mm-hmm. And even if they did make bad decisions, there's no way out of those. Yeah. Most of those contracts, they're going to be there the next couple years. I think, despite what you guys are saying, though, about the meddling Jason or Jerry Jones does with the head coach, I think this is a great job. Not only because of the talent of the roster, but yeah, Jerry Jones this year, he has come out and had some very critical in this last comment. It's just a death blow to Jason Garrett. But Belichick, Harbaugh, Tomlin, Sean Payton, Pete Carroll, the only five coaches in the league who have had their job longer than Jason Garrett's had his. You can't say that Jerry Jones has not been patient with Jason Garrett. And if I'm a head coach, if I'm on the market, I'm like, okay, so I'm going to be at the highest profile teams. For some guys, that's not their personality. Some guys would love it. Mm-hmm. There's no salary cap on coaches. They got bottomless pockets in Dallas. And I have this talent on my roster. And at least this decade, but they've been very patient with their head coach. To me, it's a great job.
You don't have final say in that locker. Yeah. You never have final say. When you walk in there, you're not the man. The man is the guy that's standing behind you. And a lot of coaches want to be able to have that authority in a locker room that you can motivate a team. And it doesn't have to be my word, but wait, Jerry Jones will be behind me in 5 minutes. It's really his word. Yeah. That's what you agree to when you sign on to coach the Dallas Cowboys. Am I right?
You are, but I just never bought into the thing that where a head coach can make me play any better. Like, I never played in the NFL for a head coach. I played for my teammates and I played for myself. And also, going to Nick's point, when you talk about the way that they built this team, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's the Sean Lee situation, right? Like, remember when Sean Lee was their defensive stopper in the middle? And when he was out, team was terrible. Now they got Van Der Esch. The same thing. Like, Sean Lee's older. Van Der Esch is their guy that they feel that can stop, you know, that can create a lot of tackles and do all that stuff. So I think that you're right in that sense, in that it's not really about, I think that they're not very judicious with who they give their money to, and they don't spread it out evenly. They high end, and then they have a whole bunch of guys that probably shouldn't even be in the league on the team.
That's the owner making those decisions, and that's why you have to be worried if you're the coach, because now he's just going to play the top end guys, and those middle guys that you speak of, they won't be on the football team.
They built this team the way the best European soccer and basketball and NBA teams are built. Let's worry about the very top of the roster. The rest will figure itself out. It does not work typically in a sport as violent as football. Mm-hmm. When injuries are such a big part of your sport, having your team built that way, it looks good preseason every year. Mm-hmm. And then once the actual real games start being played, it's a very difficult way to win.
They need to be like the Saints, you know, getting Bridgewater.
Yes.
You know, that's the kind of decision that teams who are going to be successful can withstand a big hit at quarterback, like Drew Brees. Yeah, so I think that's one of the reasons why Cowboys are there.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.